Today on Maine Calling, tips and strategies for dealing with rude behavior. Does it feel as though people are more rude these days? If so, what can you do about it? Experts say, as hard as it is to hear, you might start by looking at yourself. Often we don't realize how our words and actions affect other people. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss the reasons for and ways to deal with rudeness. A new book by a Maine author, Rudeness Rehab, argues that rudeness and incivility can harm our physical and emotional health. We'll get tips on responding to rudeness, and we want to hear your stories of rude behavior and how you handled it. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is one of those things that seems to be everywhere and often happens when you least expect it. Rude behavior. Today, we'll learn some strategies for dealing with rude people or recognizing rude behavior in yourself. My guest today, John O'Brien, a psychologist, professional speaker, and author of Rudeness Rehab, Reclaiming Incivility in the Workplace. That was a misprint. Rudeness Rehab, Reclaiming Civility in the Workplace and Your Home Space. Also with us, Brenda McAleer, Dean and Professor of Business at the University of Maine, Augusta. We invite you to join the conversation, share with us an instance of rudeness that has stuck with you, or let us know how you respond when someone is rude. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. So welcome to both of you. Thank you so much. A great Friday topic. And John, I'm going to start with you. You argue that rudeness isn't just annoying, but really it's important because it's not good for our health.
Absolutely. I think it's when it comes to rude and uncivil behavior, people underestimate the negative impact it has and how it both experiencing rudeness directed at you, witnessing rude interactions in other people, even in public, people you don't know, as well as being rude yourself and the effects that has on relationships. All that then creates stress, which then contributes to mental and physical health problems.
What kind of mental and physical health problems?
People will experience depression, anxiety, just stress in that way, as well as contributing to health problems. So when people carry a great amount of anger and stress in their lives, that in the longer term contributes to cancer, as well as cardiac problems. And so there's really a profoundly negative effect on our health when we live with too much stress.
Brenda, talk about the role of rudeness and incivility in business. I'm guessing it's not good for the bottom line.
Definitely not good for the bottom line. Gallup has released a poll that says turnover costs our economy over $1 billion with a B, dollars per year. To replace an employee who leaves, the average is 2 times that employee's annual salary. So that starts to add up for a company when you have perhaps 42% turnover in a year.
So let's talk about rudeness versus incivility versus disrespect. I have a feeling if it's a Venn diagram, they all overlap. But John, what are we talking about when we're talking about rudeness?
Well, so rudeness is kind of inconsiderate behavior that causes problems in relationships. And I would sort of get to your next question, which I think is, distinguishing between rude and uncivil behavior, that there's a lot of overlap. I would argue that they're basically interchangeable pretty much.
Okay, and it's interesting because you use the word inconsiderate, and Brenda, I'm thinking about the workplace. We think of maybe somebody being rude as somebody being outright hostile or outright mean, but just doing things that are not considerate or lacking consideration can really affect people as well. For example, an employee working really hard on a project and then having nobody say anything to them about what a nice job they did.
52% of people who leave organizations say the managers could have done something about it. Had they acknowledged them, had they rewarded them, or had they perhaps prevented some of that inconsiderate behavior? But many times, managers just don't want to get involved.
Okay. And John, let's talk about rudeness versus bullying. I think that this is a conversation very much alive right now in our converse in our culture, like people trying to make other people do something in a less than accept what used to be acceptable way.
So bullying is behavior that has the intent to intimidate or force someone to do something that the person isn't necessarily wanting to do. So it's about taking power over someone. Incivility or rude behavior in that way is not necessarily intentional, and not, although it can look intentional, isn't necessarily intentional. And the effect is not really to try to take power over someone, but often it's more just a problematic expression of stress.
So, John, one thing that was very interesting to me about your book, Rudeness Rehab, is that I started it thinking you were going to give examples of rude behavior and maybe ways to counter them. And instead, the first half to two-thirds of the book is recognizing rude behavior in yourself.
Yes, that's the challenge, right? Is that when I do talks about rudeness and incivility, most, if not all, people are saying, yes, it's a huge problem in our society, and we need to change that. And they want other people to change. They don't want to take a look at their own behavior and how, whether intentionally or not, they may be rude and uncivil to other people.
So, what are some ways in which people might be being rude and not even realizing it?
Well, I think there's, I would just say there's three types of uncivil behavior. The first is interpersonal, like we were talking about before, people saying something to demean someone, or perhaps rolling your eyes when someone is talking. Sometimes people do, for example, the eye rolling or making noises when someone says something. They don't even realize they're doing that. So that's sort of the interpersonal is one piece. Second is what I'm sure we'll talk about later, which is social media and people online writing emails or text messages, and how people can not understand the way that their words could be misinterpreted in terms of what they actually mean. And then finally, there's the victimless type of incivility. This is the one that I think people really don't get, which is, in essence, leaving a mess behind you. Leaving the photocopier jammed at work for someone else to have to deal with, or leaving dishes in the sink at your office that other people either have to work around or do for you. I mean, the message is my time's more important than yours.
That's really interesting. I'm going to stay with you, John. There's so many great tips in your book, so many strategies for dealing with rude behavior. One of them that you mention is called adaptive shunning. So, what do you mean by
Yes.
that?
Well, so shunning, from is something that is often associated with Irish people, my people, as well as others, which is, all of a sudden you just pretend that someone doesn't exist. And generally speaking, it's not something that is an effective strategy. But when you have dealt with someone, for example, in the workplace, or the example I give is in a neighborhood, someone who has been just bullying or unreasonable or difficult, that sometimes the best thing to do is to just gently ignore them. Meaning that you're not trying to think, I'm going to show them, I'm not going to talk to them. It's more just go about your life and really have as little to do with them as possible. In that way, it's more effective than sort of focusing on them and the message you want to send them or the stress that they still create in you, even when you think about them.
And Brenda, I'm thinking about the workplace, and it's kind of tricky whether you're using the technique of shunning or a different one. It's one thing if the person's your coworker, it's something else if the person's your supervisor.
Correct, but still, people who have the reputation of being bullies, and we know them in the workplace, be it a colleague or a supervisor, we know the behavior is going to be there, and consciously, we have to understand we can overcome it ourselves. We don't have to react the way that, in fact, perhaps the bully is hoping. We can let it go.
The power in letting something go. John, that's easier said than done.
I was just thinking that it's, you know, it is. It, you know, it is. And I think especially if this is something that's a chronic problem with a supervisor or a boss who's engaging in uncivil behavior. So I think that what I suggest to people is if, you know, consult with others who are your peers in your workplace, or maybe mentors outside your organization about is there an effective way to try to approach this person? Because it is possible that your supervisor doesn't understand the impact of her or his behavior. That's possible. And maybe you can address that directly with them and in a way that they'll be open. I would also say that, you know, ultimately, like Brenda was referring to earlier, ultimately, sometimes the problem is so chronic. You're not going to be able to change them, and you have to simply vote with your feet and find a better work environment to be in.
Brenda, let me ask you this. How do you decide when to say nothing, and when to defend yourself?
Well, that would be based on the situation, obviously. And there are ways of defending oneself without reacting strongly, without flipping off and screaming at someone. But you can say, I prefer not to be treated that way.
Interesting. It isn't never a good idea when somebody's being really rude and chronically rude, Brenda, to just maybe have a temper tantrum once in a while, get someone's attention.
Well, I would say we're all human, and I would suspect that that would happen on occasion. And there will come a point in time when someone has had enough and they blow up at the situation. But then, to what John said, they vote with their feet. And out
May I
they
hop
go.
in?
Yeah.
Yep.
Because I think that absolutely we're all human. None of us are going to be perfect. We are, of course, going to react to stress ourselves. But I think the problem is if you kind of go off on the person or are rude in response and emotional, then the real issue gets lost and your reaction becomes the focus. So this doesn't say it's easy, but if you are going to try to address it more directly, okay, so maybe you raise your voice, but you can raise your voice but still be civil. And that's part of what I talk about in the book as well, is being civil doesn't mean being a doormat.
Well, we've talked about work, and let's talk, and we've talked a little bit about social media. It seems to me, John, that there's kind of two kinds of rude interactions, that there are those that are face to face. It's a person you know, it's a person that you see maybe every day or every week. But then there are the distant relationships. There's the road rage, the person who goes screaming by you and flips you off, or the person who sends out a mean email or a mean text message, and you're not going to be face to face with them. Give us some advice on dealing with sort of the random stranger or person you barely know doing something really rude.
Well, for example, with road rage, In the book, I talk about driving home on a Friday after teaching at UMaine Augusta, just exhausted, and have someone cut me off and flip me the bird, which was quite alarming. So, the thing is, in those instances, we have to try to be aware of our reaction and the stress that it's creating, and try to calm ourselves down, because often they're gone, but their effect may linger. And ultimately, I would say, in terms of other interactions, when you have to look at, okay, how is this person going to be in my life in some way on a regular basis, or is this a one-off? What's their importance, and how much importance do I want to give them in my life?
That reminds me of some mom advice I give my kids is you never know what's going on in their life. It's
Yes.
really their problem that they felt the need to do that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Right. It's that they're passing along, trying to pass along their bag of anger, and you have to just work at not accepting it.
Okay. Well, we are talking about rudeness in our society and our personal interactions already. A bunch of emails coming in. Love to hear what you think on the topic. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about rudeness and incivility. My guests are Brenda McAleer, who is Dean at UMaine Augusta, Dean of the Business School, and John O'Brien, author of the new book, Rudeness Rehab: Reclaiming Civility in the Workplace and Your Home Space. We would love for you to join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. George on Facebook writes, "Rudeness absolutely destroys civility in society. When I encounter rudeness, I instantly point it out to the person doing it, whether they realize it or not." And I'm interested in George's comment because I suspect there are many people who don't appreciate having rudeness pointed out to them. But then every once in a while, somebody who says, "Oh my goodness, I didn't realize I was doing that." So I'd like to hear both of your thoughts on this. I'll start with you, John, about when to maybe let someone know what they're up to.
Well, I think, of course, it depends. There's a whole lot of it depends in situations, but I think especially when it's a relationship that's ongoing, that's when it's more likely that you want to try to give them feedback. And sometimes I encourage people to say, "Ouch," or "Ooh, that didn't feel good," or "Gosh, could we start this conversation again? I'm not liking the way that this is going." And sometimes that gets you're not pointing to the person and saying, "Gosh, you're being really rude," but you're giving a signal that hopefully is sort of holding up a mirror for the other person.
Brenda, thoughts?
Yes, well, and I've read John's book a couple of times, so I have used that phrase, "ouch," when somebody has said something. I've also, when I've seen an interaction that I thought perhaps that one of the two parties was being rude, after the fact, I went up and said, "Did you realize what was going on in that situation?" And 9 times out of 10, the person who was rude went, "Oh, I didn't mean it that way. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize." And I suggest they go and apologize to the person to whom they were rude.
Apologies go a long way, don't they, John?
Absolutely. I think absolutely. And especially when, people sort of take responsibility for their behavior and are saying, "I didn't mean that," or "Gosh, I was just feeling really stressed." That really is important. And again, any of us, I think I make the point in the book, any of us might, me too, can fall into stress-related behavior. And so it's not to be afraid to say that I'd like to hit the refresh button and start again.
You have some acronyms in the book, and I like this one: HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If you're feeling hungry, angry, lonely, tired, maybe don't say that first thing that pops in your mind.
Correct, yes. And that's an acronym that I think comes out of the recovery movement, but it's to recognize that you're emotionally vulnerable when you're out of balance, and when you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If you're feeling sick, there's lots of different things that create emotional vulnerability. And it's really about being aware of just where you're at.
We'll go to Judy calling from Farmington. Hi, Judy, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I was grocery shopping at Hannaford's, and I just put some chocolate into my basket. And this older guy came up to me and said, "Oh, you don't need to be buying that. You're pretty as you are."
Ouch.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I just told him it was none of his business.
What do you guys think?
What does being pretty have to do with eating chocolate? So it was kind of a backhanded compliment.
Oh, it was patronizing and it was body shaming.
Yep. Well, good. Well, I hope that after you said that, Judy, he never does anything like that again. Go ahead, John.
I hope not.
I think sometimes, Judy, what you're saying is, this doesn't mean that it excuses his behavior, but sometimes people like that actually think they're being funny. And I think it's really important what you did to kind of give him feedback that wasn't funny. That was actually, rude.
Actually, the way he said it, he was not being funny.
Really?
Yeah, no, I don't think so at all. He was very serious.
Oh, ooh, Judy, I'm going to keep you on because... Go ahead.
The thing is, I'm a little overweight, but not nearly as much as he was.
So... So this actually ties in with what I was about to say. Part of John's book, one of his pieces of advice, is to look at other people with compassion. And so, John, how would you utilize that strategy in this circumstance?
Well, that's a challenging one, right? Especially with what Judy is saying, because I guess I was thinking in a positive way that maybe he was just trying to be funny. Judy, I'm so sorry that he treated you this way.
I think it was pretty hurtful.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And especially from a stranger, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think it's, I would say that recognizing that whether he, whatever his intention was, he's out there in the world saying things like this to other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what impact is that having on his relationships? And that's on him. So, understanding, the compassion is about trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes, but I wouldn't stay there too long in this case.
Not his case, no way.
Well, and the other thing that I'm thinking about from this example, Judy, and it's such a good one, and I'm so sorry it happened to you, but it's a really good example for a lot of the things that John has talked about in his book. And one of them, John, is like, if something like this happens to you, not to keep it in, to maybe talk to people, because probably Judy told a friend, I'm guessing, Judy, you told a friend,
yep,
or a loved one, and they were like, what a rude thing to say. You're like the prettiest person I know, or like, and that makes you feel better, right, John?
Absolutely. I think by talking about instances like this to other people, you can get support. And just like we all here are supporting you, Judy, about how horrifying this is, but it also gives you perspective, right, on this interaction. And ideally also can help you to work at not carrying it with you, because that's the real problem is interactions like this, we have them and we continue to cycle them over and over in our mind. And then, he's still having a negative impact on you on an ongoing way, and don't give him that power, right?
Right.
Well, Judy, thank you for calling, and I hope that your future grocery shopping trips are much more positive. My goodness. We're going to move on. Let's see. We're going to go to John calling from Old Orchard Beach. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking the call. Dark chocolate is always good. I was in Walgreens yesterday, and I noticed everything I bought had some chocolate. I only got about five things, and I tried to kind of make a joke about it with the checkout girl, and chocolate's okay, but she wasn't about to engage about chocolate. But anyway, she's a lot younger than me, and I'm 69 with a bad birthday next week with a 7. So anyway, I heard John saying something about the Irish and shunning people. The Irish are very friendly traditionally. And, of course, being almost 70, I know the old society. And I take Ubers around here sometimes, and they're mostly now from Somalia and places. And they have a cultural friendliness. They will let me sit on the front seat and have a conversation. Now, New York, Boston, where I lived for 30 years, I have cousins O'Brien's out of Massachusetts. I know what I'm talking about. I know rudeness. I know New York. I lived there too. That is especially out of New York, and it kind of gave permission for other cities like Boston, Philadelphia, to be aggressive, And if people are aggressive, a lot of people are not aggressive. They're nice, and the Irish are nice. There was a thing called boycotting way back in the famine times against the landlord and their agent. Boycotting. I never heard of Irish shunning, by the way. I'm an expert in Ireland, but John O'Brien is still a great program. Keep going.
John, I love hearing just the touch of your Irish accent. This is so fun, I have to say.
Oh, my God. I'm old, and I was in Boston for 30 years, so that's it. There's the answer.
Well, I'm really glad you brought this up, because there are different cultures, different things are acceptable, whether you're talking about different areas of the United States or different parts of the world. I know that there are places in Europe that think that Americans look daffy because we smile so much, you know, and we think that those people are so rude. So, John, some advice on navigating, you know, the interaction between an Irishman and a New Yorker and somebody else? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, first of all, John, thank you for your comment. And yes, I absolutely agree with you that by and large, Irish people are very friendly. And I've been to Ireland, and there's a wonderful hospitality there. So I want to support what it is that you're saying. I'm not saying that most Irish people are engaging in shunning. But I do think your point about culture, and when we think about culture, we often think about kind of ethnic background, but culture can also be regional, and sort of people from the Northeast. The Northeast culture has a reputation. You know, I've heard people say people in New England are cold like the weather. So our behavior being sort of, you know, less interactive can be read one way. So there's regional differences. And if you are in a different region, if you are from New York, where, yes, being aggressive and needing to find your way in the city is the norm, and then you go to the Midwest and use that same behavior, well, you're going to be standing out. And that's going to be seen as rude, perhaps, there, whereas in a larger city, it's not.
John, thank you for bringing up that part of the conversation. Here's an email from Frank. I have found that people today misinterpret direct and honest communication for rudeness. I believe this is a result of the softening of our society. People today have a hard time receiving and accepting criticism, even if the criticism is presented in a respectful, civil manner. There's a reason why the saying, "the truth hurts," exists. People can work at how to properly receive criticism, too. And Brenda, I'm going to turn to you about giving and receiving criticism, especially in the workplace.
Well, and I think I do agree very definitely with that, the comment from our person who has called in. That being said, I agree that we need to work on being able to take perhaps some constructive criticism well and not react immediately, because we hope that the people who are sharing that criticism with us are doing it because they want us to realize that we are doing something that needs to improve.
Mm. And is there a way, Brenda, that you would advise someone who's a coworker or a supervisor to give that criticism? My kids, when they were middle school, learned about the compliment sandwich. Is that a good way to give criticism?
Absolutely. You always start off with something positive, get in the point you're trying to make, and end it with something positive. Now, human nature being what it is, we still hear that negative piece, but if it's couched again with positive on either side, it does help to soften it, as we say.
And I'm guessing not only helping to soften it, but it makes the person giving the criticism actually think about the other person, think about the good attributes in the other person, and not just be mad about something.
Absolutely, because that's reminding themselves that this person is worthy.
An email here from Bo. I'm reminded of a comment by an old friend, Rosalie Smith, who was a school counselor at LaSalle University back in the 90s. She was as enlightened as anyone I've ever met. I asked her what her advice was regarding interacting with other people. She said, quote, "Know the difference between when an issue is yours and when the issue is someone else's." Sound advice. I still take that to heart multiple times a day. And I love this, Bo, because I happen to know, John, you started your career as a school counselor. What a great start for somebody who's going to be a therapist someday.
Yes, no, it was. I was 24 years old and working in a high school in Massachusetts. And the hot rumor among the faculty was that I was required to grow a mustache so that people could tell the difference between the seniors and me.
An email here from Matt. Can you please talk about intentional rudeness versus things people find rude that are done without the intention of being rude?
Interesting. Okay. Well, I mean, rude behavior that is stress related. Sometimes the intention is that someone is just kind of reacting. Now, maybe they're reacting and in their stress, they're purposefully saying something hurtful. That's possible. But it's also possible that they just say something that's more a general frustration. They're not aware of how they're coming across. And that gets to the point about kind of unintentional behavior. Or going back to what we talked about earlier, the people that are engaging in that victimless incivility, where they're leaving a mess behind them, they may not even really realize or be aware of the impact that's having on other people. And that can be another example of unintentional behavior.
An email here from Catherine. I had someone I didn't know walk up to me and tell me that I needed to dress my age. It surprised me a bit, and then I proceeded to say, I would like you to know that your opinion has absolutely no bearing on my life. I then turned and walked away. Brenda, you like that?
I do like that. Congratulations for standing up for yourself. No, I, why would somebody, one, want to share that kind of a comment? And two, nice that it didn't have the impact that the person being rude expected it to have.
We'll go to Philip calling from Standish. Hi, Philip, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm so glad that you mentioned unintentional rudeness because, as a person that has lived with ADHD his entire life, a cornerstone of one of the cornerstones of most of the social issues I encounter come from rudeness, me actually being rude to other people, without intention. And part of the reason for that is because having ADHD, a lot of the impulses that I get, I don't really have a pause button that I can press to sort of suppress those impulses and think about them before I act on them. So getting distracted by things, ignoring what people say, talking over people, changing topics at inappropriate times, these are all things that regularly impact my experiences with other people and come across as very rude and have very real social impacts between, like, with my relationships with other people. And not having a strong relationship with every single person I interact with, it's very difficult sometimes for people to give me that feedback. And so I just wanted to say, like, I value so much when somebody tells me that I'm being rude because I very, very frequently only notice these things in retrospect, and I'm very frequently mortified and wish that somebody had pointed out to me.
Philip, yeah, thank
And
you so much. And so many of us, whether it's ADHD or autism, so many of us are working through something that's kind of bigger than other people might know. And I'm wondering, Philip, if you've developed some tricks in your adult life to, once somebody gives you some feedback, to try to go against your impulse.
Yes, absolutely. Well, so, and part of the process of sort of learning to deal, I was only diagnosed recently. So part of the process of coping with this is sort of understanding what I can and can't change. And so with ADHD, it's a little bit hard for me to change the actual rudeness behavior in the moment, but the skills that I have been working on cultivating is accepting feedback gracefully and being able to hear those things from people without letting that embarrassment or mortification kind of overwhelm me and cause me to, react more defensively or whatever. So really quelling that defensive response and allowing people to give me that feedback and then being grateful for it and then, like, working through the forgiveness process is a big strategy for me.
John, what do you think of Philip's strategy?
Well, I think it's wonderful, and I want to just kind of applaud your efforts, Philip, and understanding, the impact of your behavior that's unintentional and being open to feedback. I think it's absolutely, as you're saying, it's just to continue to work at implementing skills and to try to be, growing your self-awareness, as we all need to in terms of your behavior.
Philip, thanks so much for your call. We are going to take a quick break. We're talking about rude behavior in society, recognizing it in oneself, strategies for dealing with it when you encounter it in others. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about rudeness today on Maine Calling. Our guests, UMaine Augusta Business School Dean Brenda McAleer and psychologist and author John O'Brien. His new book, Rudeness Rehab, Reclaiming Civility in the Workplace and in Your Home Space. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can also reach us by email, talk@mainepublic.org. John, we talked briefly about some strategies, the strategy of adaptive shunning, about teaching ourselves to not care. What are a couple other strategies that you would like to talk about?
I think of two others, just briefly. One is the power of breath and breathing. You know, it's not like I'm going to go somewhere and be like, oh, shoot, I forgot my lungs. Like, they're always with us. But when we get more stressed or tense, we tend to hold our breath or breathe very shallowly, which then further increases our stress. So working at using diaphragmatic breathing or abdominal breathing, it goes by various names, but just a few of those breaths can help to center us, and therefore we can be more likely to respond in situations effectively as opposed to react emotionally. The other skill I would just highlight is the skill of active listening, which I think so often these days in interactions, when one person is talking, other people are focused on what they're going to say as opposed to really listening. And so the importance of really listening to people. And when you encounter someone being rude, rather than responding, active listening by saying things like, how so? Or what did you mean? Or say more about that. If someone has said something rude and you use those words, that holds up a mirror to what to them and what they have just said. And they have to think about then maybe rephrasing what they have said. That does two things. It gives them a chance to rethink and decide if they really mean to say what they've said. But if they double down on rudeness, by doing that, it gives you a little bit more time to think about how you're going to respond. So I would offer those two things.
And Brenda, you are nodding away.
On the active listening, well, you know, besides in the workplace, I mean, I am at an educational institution. I have students in a classroom. And when they're asking me questions, I find myself already formulating my response without listening to the question. So when people have been, if you will, rude to me, my first reaction would be to snap back. But if I'm really listening to what they say, I can ask those follow-on questions like John has mentioned.
We'll go to Samantha calling from Saco. Hi, Samantha. Go ahead.
Hi. I appreciate this conversation. It's great because I guess my question and like problem that I really can't get over is, so my whole career I was a bartender and a server and worked directly with the public, angry people and then drunk people and just stressed out people all around. And now I'm a nurse and now I work with stressed out sick people who obviously have short tempers or snap for all their reasons. And all of that stuff just rolls right off me and it doesn't bother me. And I actually can understand it. And I mean, if they're being a little over the top, sometimes you can kind of make the little passive, like little comment back and then they get kind of how they're becoming or how they're acting. And it's useful. But in relationships with people that are closer to me, when even like the snippiest little remark is said, I almost viscerally feel it. You know, it's a whole different reaction. And it just blows my mind because it's like, why can I control that? And it literally bothers me at all, which I get the difference between like relationships and the idea of like, well, this person's a non-existent, but still it's just such a different reaction. And I also wanted to say that Phil's comment about people bringing up things and that idea of people just saying, hey, you're being kind of rude right now, because I like to talk a lot as well. When someone's like, hey, wait a minute, it actually it like pauses me. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, thanks. You're right. I should pause for a second. And I don't get offended whatsoever. And it's very helpful because I do recognize that.
Samantha, thank you so much for your call. And John, I want to go back to like sort of her main point there is like why with some people we can let it roll off our backs like water off a duck, and that other people just the tiniest thing is like, and you're just mad the rest of the day.
Well, there, you know, people who are closer to us have more power in our lives. They have more importance in our lives. And so how they treat us, what they say to us, therefore, it's going to have more power. So, of course, it's going to be more difficult to let that go. The other thing is, you know, as we were saying earlier, when we are more emotionally vulnerable, when we're back to the hungry, angry, lonely, tired, when we're sick ourselves, it's going to be harder to kind of let those things go as well. So sometimes it's about our level of emotional vulnerability, but it is also about the fact that we're all going to be affected by other people's behavior, and we're not going to be able to get to the place where some mindfulness gurus say that they are never affected by other people's emotions. And I think it's a great goal, but I just don't think that that's something most of us can do.
Samantha, thank you so much. Boy, a server and then a nurse. You are a hero. Thank you for calling in. We'll go to Sabiq, who is calling from Auburn. Hi, Sabiq. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for, I have a couple of incidents. As a cab driver, I used to drive a cab in Ohio. Then normally we just like routine customers going to the doctor's appointment, whatever, dialysis, all these things. So one morning I pick up a customer going to the doctor, and she was just fine. Everything's up. Well, she said, hi, how you doing? I always do that. And then later when she was coming back from the doctor, and I say like, hey, how you doing? She said like, don't talk to me, just drive.
Hmm.
So I said, so I didn't know what happened. So I was kind of shocked. And then I said, why is it best? I just keep silent. But later on, I realized, what I found is, it's not like because of her fault. I think she got the bad news from the doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't about you. It was about her. And John's nodding.
Yes. I think that it sounds like you were able, Sabiq, to use kind of principles of compassion, that probably that was something going on for her that wasn't about you, and that she had gotten difficult news and she didn't have energy to be able to try to put it into social interaction. She was just very focused on whatever news she'd gotten.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sabiq, I'm sure you're encountering people when they're very vulnerable very often. So thank you so much for calling and sharing that. Boy, there seems to be sort of a little bit of a underlying message here, John. And it's just like, you never know what somebody else is going through.
Absolutely. Right. And that's where, we see someone's behavior directed towards us. And so it's very easy to fall into that trap that it is about us. But it's a sad lesson I learned many years ago, which is it's not all about me. And so it's, recognizing the power of being able to let go of that idea that other people's behavior is always about us.
And Brenda, you want to join in?
I did want to say, and this goes back to what you had said earlier, Jennifer, and of course, mother's advice is always the best. You don't know what somebody else's day has been like.
We'll go to Don calling from Castine. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I am calling about passive-aggressive behavior, which I think is a part of your topic today. And it's an important one, too, because it's very subtle. And I realized that I was capable of doing that. And when I realized it, I was horrified, because it's a way of either criticizing someone or making them feel like they've done something to you in a way that is very indirect. It's very sort of like an underhanded comment.
Mm. John, not to put you on the spot, but can you think of an example of something you did and you were like, oh, gosh, later you realize that's passive aggressive?
Oh, God, it's hard. It's hard because it's so subtle. That it's in a situation where you might mentioned to someone something about transportation, let's say, and they could have picked you up had they thought about it or something like that. Just little things. They're little, but they can be hurtful and make someone feel like they have done something wrong or ignored you in some way.
Yeah, and John, you know what? John admits in the book that he's been guilty of it himself. So, John, go ahead.
Well, you know, I was thinking of not so much of a confessional of all of my passive-aggressive behavior, which we could get into, but more how this sometimes comes up in the workplace, where if someone is needing, sends an email because there's a project deadline, and they need information from a coworker who purposefully does not answer, and they need it by five. The project's due at 5 p.m. and they send a response at 4:58 p.m. That's an example of kind of passive aggressive behavior that again is creating stress in others. So that's that's purposeful. Kind of what Don was talking about, I think, was that it's unintentional in his mind, and only sort of recently or whatever being able to learn what the behavior was.
And so much of this, isn't it, John, learned behavior. Maybe that's how one of your parents talked to you.
Absolutely, right? Or just behavior patterns that you have developed over time to cope with stress or cope with situations, and you don't really know any better. But all of us are works in progress, and we can learn to change our behavior.
We'll go on. Thanks, Don, for that. We'll go to Robert, who's calling from Biddeford. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking the call and a great conversation. I wanted to bring up a topic called intrinsic validation, where we get the opportunity to validate somebody else before we bring in our own perspective. I'm a business coach, leadership coach, and one of the things that I recognize is that people want to be heard at a deep level. And when we can bring empathy into the conversation, that changes a conversation where we are able to bring down somebody else's walls. And when you get behind somebody else's walls, and my wall has to come down first before someone else is going to bring down their wall, otherwise they're going to be defensive. So I have to learn how to place my own self in my own place of empathy to be able to allow somebody else to share openly, to have a valid conversation.
So basically saying to somebody something like, I'm just brainstorming here, something like, wow, I have to confess that this whole situation makes me feel really uncomfortable. And I'm sure it does for you too. Is there something you want to talk about?
Yeah, something along that line, exactly. And I usually like to use questioning, like, tell me more about that. One of the exercises I like to do with my clients is say, what is it like for me to always have to be right? And to have them ask that question to somebody important in their life.
And it sounds to me, John, like intrinsic validation is related to active listening.
Absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like with the way that Robert's talking about that, absolutely. It is about kind of reflecting back to people about what they've said.
Yeah, Robert, thanks so much for your call. We have so many calls and emails coming in, and I'm so sorry to those of you I'm not going to be able to get to in this hour, but we'll go to David calling from Hamden. Hi, David, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for taking the call. I just want to quickly reflect on what Philip had said earlier about his recent diagnosis of ADHD. I've been dealing with that all my life, and I the other day I was thinking, I need a reminder to listen. And so I said, well, I'll have a tattoo on my wrist that just says listen more and talk less. So
David, it's so interesting because I think that this is not something a tattoo that would only be beneficial for people with ADHD. Listen more and talk less. What is the old saw, John, that there's a reason God gave us two ears and one mouth?
Yes, absolutely. And I think of the acronym WAIT. Why am I talking? When you catch yourself talking, maybe it's like you have to stop yourself. Or what do I want to talk? That sometimes the best thing is to just kind of let others have the floor.
Yeah. David, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. Let's see here. I'm going to see if I can find something really short in just a few seconds. Ferris says, I teach small kids and I teach them that tone of voice is so important. It can change the meaning to so much and matters. Something like, I'm sorry, can be said in so many different ways. So we'll leave on that note, tone, baby, tone. And thank you both for joining us today. Brenda McAleer, Dean and Professor of Business at the University of Maine, Augusta, and John O'Brien, a psychologist, professional speaker, executive coach, and the author of the new book, Rudeness Rehab, Reclaiming Civility in the Workplace and Your Home Space. Today's sound engineer was Jess Miller. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandrow. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.